If you did your lesson today, I have a question for you. What is the main focus? Widows. Okay, some of you did your lesson. Yes. We're going to make it a little bit more general. The main focus was caring for the needy, particularly women, needy women, and in particular today's lesson was about widows. Well, Paul recommends that the local church should honor widows who are widows indeed. To honor means to provide financial support. And widows indeed are women who have no other visible means of financial support. And as you learn from your lesson, God instructs his people who have enough to care for those who don't, especially the widows and the orphans. Well, who are widows? In today's society, the term widow can probably be expanded to include women who not only have experienced the death of a spouse, but also those who have been deserted by their spouses, especially if they've been left with children to support. How many of you have been widowed by the death of a spouse? How many have been widowed through the desertion of a spouse? And this is up to you whether you want to say that or not. In your small groups, if you have gone through this experience and you feel like it, you might want to share what your greatest needs were at that time and how God met your needs. I think it would be beneficial to you, other women in your group. But as a background for your lesson today, we're going to look at three examples of how God provides for women who have a financial need, plus lessons for those who are needy. And these principles will apply to anyone who is in need, not just to widows. So first of all, turn to Ruth chapter 2. Now that's about one-fifth of the way through the Bible, and it's between Judges and 1 Samuel. So you open up your Bible about one-fifth of the way and open it up, and it's going to be somewhere in there. The book of Ruth, just a little small book. Ruth is the story of God's provision for two women. Naomi, who was an older widow who was not really of marriageable age, and Ruth, a younger widow who was. During a time of famine in Israel, Naomi and her husband and her two boys moved to the neighboring country of Moab. That's where they went to live. The boys grew up and married local girls. Well, one day, Naomi's husband died. Then her two sons died, leaving three widows. Naomi decided to go back to her hometown in Israel, where she had other family. One of her daughters-in-law traveled back with her, and they arrived during the barley harvest time. And we're going to start in chapter 2, verse 1. Now Naomi had a kinsman of her husband, a man of great wealth, of the family of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth, the Moabitess, said to Naomi, "Please let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after one in whose sight I may find favor." And she said to her, "Go, my daughter." So she departed and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers, and she happened to come to the portion of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the family of Elimelech. One of the ways that God provided for needy folks in a community was by this plan. And you read this in your lesson. I'm going to read it again in Deuteronomy 24, 19 through 21. This was God's instructions to the people of Israel. When you reap your harvest in your field and have forgotten a sheaf in the field, you shall not go back to get it. It shall be for the alien, for the orphan, and for the widow, in order that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hands. And when you beat your olive tree, you shall not go over the boughs again. It shall be for the alien, the orphan, and the widow. When you gather the grapes of your vineyard, you shall not go over it again. It shall be for the alien, the orphan, and the widow. Perfectly good food was purposely left in the fields for the poor to have. So what was the responsibility of the landowner? To leave it there, to make sure their reapers knew to leave it there. Okay. What was the responsibility of the needy? They had to go get it. They had to put on their work clothes, get their pails and baskets, and actually go out and work for it, right? But they had to go get it. How many of you come from farming communities where this practice may have been still going on? The owner of the field where Ruth was gleaning went even further. Go on to verse 15, same chapter, Ruth chapter 2, but verse 15. And let's see what else he added to this. When she, that is Ruth, rose to glean, Boaz commanded his servant, saying, Let her glean even among the sheaves, and do not insult her. And also you shall purposely pull out for her some grain from the bundles, and leave it that she may glean, and do not rebuke her. Not only would Ruth be allowed to glean alongside the workers, where she would be protected, but the workers were also to loosen the grain and leave it for her to gather more easily. In other words, Boaz was saying, don't just let her have the pickings, but make sure she gets good stuff and doesn't have to work so hard to get it. Wow, that's a generous heart, isn't it? Well, let's talk about ways to apply this principle in the here and now. How do we help someone who is needy? What is most beneficial? Well, for the last couple of months, we have been collecting things for people who have had need. This last month in November, we've been collecting food to give to the food pantry down at Fair Park Friendship Center. Other members of the church have been collecting food for CCA and for the pregnancy center. So we've been collecting food for these Christian ministries so that they can give out food. Or you can give food directly to a family. On our angel trees, I noticed Sunday that there were several gift certificates for groceries, from grocery stores. You can bring bags of groceries to their homes. We call that giving a pounding. You give good, usable stuff, right? Not what has been sitting in your pantry for years. Now, I'm going to bare my heart for a few minutes and share a little from my own life. And I don't normally like to do this. My husband, Ron, and I were in the ministry for about 22 years, much of that time living on support as home missionaries. And what that means is that there were contributions made to the ministry that we worked for, and then we would get some of that money to live on. Ron worked very hard, but our income was often very meager because home missions, that is here in the States, are not often as attractive as foreign missions. And so you don't get as many contributions to home missions. But we knew exactly where we were supposed to be, and we knew that that's where God wanted us to be. One particularly tough time was in the mid to late 80s, and we received several poundings during that time. Most were composed of terrific, very usable stuff. In fact, one friend gave us a 3-month supply of venison. Well, I learned to cook that just like beef, and we were very happy to have it, very thankful for it, because we wouldn't have had it otherwise. So we learned to eat venison every day in every way you could possibly imagine. Once, though, we received a bag of groceries that had obviously been sitting on someone's shelf for years. There were box mixes that were full of weevils, there were cans that were rusted, and there were some of them that had rancid contents. And I know the giver meant well, however, we couldn't use that gift. And it increased our pain and our embarrassment because it was like rubbing salt in a wound. Since leaving the full-time ministry, Ron has been involved in helping businesses develop their human resources, particularly companies affiliated with the oil industry. And we've had several very prosperous years. God has just really blessed us with more than we ever asked for. But this year, when the price of oil went down to $9 a barrel, all of his company's contracts for training were canceled for the rest of the year. And in spite of his best efforts, his business has still struggled since February. Without the generosity of friends and family, we would not have been able to eat well over the past few months. We've received several marvelous poundings. In fact, last week when I returned from my aunt's funeral, knowing that all three kids would be home for the holidays, I kept wondering how I would buy the fixings for a Thanksgiving dinner for them. But God provided through the gracious surprise gift of several bags of groceries, which contained exactly what we needed in light. It was absolutely marvelous. As we kept taking things out of the bags, it was what I would have bought if I'd gone to the store. And I just had to praise God for his provision. So providing food is one way that you can care for needy families. But what about other stuff? Well, there's clothes and furniture and bikes and all kinds of things that people need. But the guideline remains the same. Give good, usable stuff before having your garage sale. Now, if you're desperate for money to pay for a utility bill or groceries, have your garage sale. Use that money to support your family. But if you're just having a garage sale to provide money to go out and decorate your house, and you have some really good stuff that somebody else could use who can't go to the store and buy it for themselves, try to think of somebody that you could give that to. I'm not trying to put a guilt trip on you. I'm just trying to help you from the benefit, from the side of someone who has been on the receiving end and what I have learned through the process. Throw out the stained and torn things. You know, don't put them in a bag and give them to somebody else. We have also received bags of clothes, and we gratefully wear them. I was given the pants. I was given the shirt. I was given the socks. I don't mind that. Grateful. I'm thankful for anything else. I remember one particularly good bag of clothes that came directly from someone's closet, just still with tags on it. Obviously, they were brand new things. The girls and I were able to use most of that gift. But unfortunately, we have also received bags of clothing that were the leftovers from garage sales, things that no one else wanted, and things were torn and stained, zippers broken. And once again, it's like rubbing salt in a wound. And I'm not trying to be arrogant. I'm not trying to be critical or picky. We deserve absolutely nothing. I'm only trying to give you a glimpse of what it's like on the other end so that you'll know how to best help somebody who is needy. So when you clean out your closet, you change your furniture and your drapes, think about giving it to someone who can't go shopping for those things. Let me emphasize that receiving is a humbling experience. It is a very humbling experience. How many of you have been on the receiving end of someone else's benevolence? Okay, so you know what I'm talking about, don't you? It's hard, very hard. It is much harder to receive than it is to give. And if you haven't been in that position, you don't understand that. But if you have been there, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Because it's an admission that you can't make it on your own. Wow, you have to swallow your pride and your reputation. You think everybody else has it made but you. Well, I would venture to say that there are at least a handful of you out there who are having financial difficulties at this time. So you're not alone. I know I'm not alone. You want to be grateful, but you have to learn to accept gifts with gratitude and joy and not embarrassment. It's not really a sense of shame, but it's a sense of embarrassment that attention is being drawn to you to have this need. And I don't like having attention drawn to myself. I like to go do my job, do it well, know that it's benefiting other people. But I don't want attention to be drawn to me. And so going through a difficult time where attention is being drawn to me is embarrassing. And I have to get beyond that. And learning to accept gifts. And then you have to learn how to express thankfulness to the giver and to God. In Colossians chapter 3, verses 17 through 19, three times God tells us we should live a life of gratitude. It says, be thankful, be grateful, be thankful. It should be a, you know, part of our life. Whether we're needy or not, we're needy from Him in every aspect. So we should live a life of gratitude anyway. So it doesn't matter whether you have little or much. You should live a life of thankfulness. But when you're receiving something from someone, you know, if you've ever given, how much joy you get just to give. And you want that person that you're giving to experience your joy just in receiving it. And it's really hard to do because you're embarrassed and you're swallowing your pride and it's an emotional time. But you can reward the giver with a smile and share in her joy. That's a hard thing to do, really hard thing to do. So we who have plenty should be ready to provide something for the needy in our families, our churches, and our communities, right? We should. Gosh, we have so much in our community and in our country. Back to our story. Ruth gleaned the field, fed both herself and Naomi with the food. God provided a husband for Ruth as she ended up marrying Boaz, the man who owned the field. And Naomi lived with them and was provided for that way. Ruth had a son who became the grandfather of David, Israel's greatest king and the author of most of the Psalms, which tell us so much about the compassion of God. He had a compassionate, giving heart just like his great-grandparents, and I think he got that genetically. It's passed down through the families. Let's look at how God provided for another widow. The next one is 1 Kings 17. Now, that's just three books over. So you have 1 Samuel, 2 Samuel, and then 1 Kings. And you go all the way to chapter 17. The background to this is a prophet named Elijah prayed for a drought for 3 years in order to get the attention of a wicked king. But then he had to live during that drought. And so did others who were not wicked, such as this widow and her son. God sent Elijah to the widow who was going to provide for him. But guess what? She herself was out of food. So Elijah asked her for bread. And we're going to start reading in verse 12. And this is her answer. She said, "As the Lord your God lives, I have no bread, only a handful of flour in the bowl and a little oil in the jar. And behold, I'm gathering a few sticks that I may go in and prepare for me and my son that we may eat it and die." Then Elijah said to her, "Do not fear. Go, do as you have said, but make me a little bread cake from it first and bring it out to me. And afterward, you may make one for yourself and for your son. For thus says the Lord God of Israel, the bowl of flour shall not be exhausted, nor shall the jar of oil be empty until the day that the Lord sends rain on the face of the earth." So she went and did according to the word of Elijah, and she and her household ate for many days. The bowl of flour was not exhausted, nor did the jar of oil become empty, according to the word of the Lord which he spoke through Elijah. Now Elijah was God's representative. By telling her to fix this bread first, he was telling her that she was to put her hope in God. Then he promised to keep the oil and the flour coming as long as it was needed. As she ministered to his needs, she was helped to help herself. Did her circumstances change? Was she still a widow? Yes. Did she still have to raise a son alone? Yes. But what was changed? She had a provision for her to help in that way. Now, what was her responsibility? She still had to go out and gather the sticks. She had to mix the flour and the oil together. She had to make the bread and cook it. But God supplied the ingredients. There was still a drought. That's all they had to eat. The same thing, day after day, meal after meal, bread, bread, bread. She had to be content with the little she had and happy to have it, right? Do you realize how hard that is in this society? If you've been on the needy end, you know how hard that is in this society. To be content with little or with less. Although a little in America is worth millions in comparable comfort to poorer countries. We need to keep that in perspective too. But it doesn't always help when we're looking around us. Here's another example from my life. Due to the downturn in oil industry, Ron has had time to spend writing a book about his wilderness ministry with troubled youth. And this has drawn the attention of literary agents and publishing companies, a book that will help troubled families nationwide. This week, his agent began shopping Ron's book to 12 publishers who have expressed an interest. We may find out about the sale of the book in a week or two. Then again, it may not sell. Also, he has been working out a deal with a major oil company for training, which may yield a contract worth perhaps more than anything we have ever made in a year. We find out at the end of next week if his company gets that contract. So visions of prosperity are floating through my head. Forget the sugar plums. You know, then again, the contract may go to another company. Last year, our mini church was studying the book of Ecclesiastes, and we were asked to answer a question. If you had everything you wanted and needed materially, what would you like to do with your life? Well, I knew immediately because I had thought about it before. I would like to provide full support to several Christian missionaries so they don't have to waste time and energy worrying about raising it. Just go out and be used by God somewhere. Well, that was before this year. We can't support ourselves, much less anyone else right now. God has a sense of humor, doesn't he? But I can give my time, and I do. The question still remains, if God doesn't increase our financial prosperity, can I still be content and happy? Yeah, that is a tough question. What a challenge. Philippians 4:19 says that I can. And that verse is quoted all the times out of context, but here is it's in context. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. And that context is being in want or in plenty. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. So we know I have the capacity to do so. But you know what? That doesn't really make it easier, because I still have all the temptations of looking around and seeing what others have that I don't. You know, sometimes God provides not with cash, but by keeping us healthy, by giving us the basic and the plain, just like this widow. We still have to do our part, and that's first to put our hope in God. Not in circumstances, not in future prosperity. God provided a helper for this needy woman, not a husband, but a friend. And he kept her son alive to continue to provide for her later. She placed her hope in God and was rewarded with his provision. But what else did she have to learn from this? That sharing from her meager stores with another needy one didn't impoverish her life, but greatly enriched it. Remember, she only had these two jars, one with flour and one with oil, and God was replenishing it day by day. She didn't have a storehouse full of flour and oil to look back on. She had to trust God day by day for every bit of food. Well, this is an area in which I struggle, and I confess, there is a fine line between good stewardship and lack of faith. In fact, what you think may be careful planning might lead to miserliness and stinginess. And I'll give you an example. What do you do when you have in your fridge and freezer one chicken and a pound of ground beef and $10, not knowing when you're going to have any more money to buy groceries? Do you make that meal when special needs calls you? Do you take it and just share it with somebody who has a need? Or do you hold on to it to last the week for your own family? That's a tough decision. How far do you take faith and prudence? That's a tough question. I don't have an answer to that because it's something I struggle with. But it's something that even those who are on the needy end have to keep in mind, not to become stingy or miserly just because you don't have a lot. How do we look at helping someone in need as not being an imposition? Wow. You know, in our busy society, what changes in our own lifestyles do we need to make? Is there time in my busy schedule to spontaneously respond to someone who needs help today or tomorrow and not next week or the week after? You know, or do I have to fit it into my daytimer? Oh, I'm sorry you're in the hospital today, but I have an hour I can give you in 3 weeks. You know, that's the kind of lives that we live, right? Most of us are scheduled, you know, day after day after day. It's so hard for us to be spontaneous, and I admit, I fail in this area too. But I get more blessing when I do drop what I'm doing and when I know somebody has an immediate need and go and take care of that need than I would have if I'd have stayed and done what I was doing, which is probably something on the computer that I could have done later anyway. One more widow, just a few pages over in 2 Kings 4. Now, God enabled this widow to actually improve her own condition. That prophet Elijah trained another prophet to take his place, and this guy's name was Elisha. Let's read verse 1. Now a certain woman of the wives of the sons of the prophets cried out to Elisha, "Your servant, my husband, is dead, and you know that your servant feared the Lord, and the creditor has come to take my two children to be his slaves." This widow's husband had been in the ministry. He died, leaving debts to be paid. As a prophet, his calling prevented him from making money. He was dependent upon the contributions of the community to him and his family. In those days, and even until recently, a creditor could take the sons and put them to work to pay off the debt, and we call this indentured servants. It was common among the early colonists of this nation. One of my ancestors came over from England this way, and chances are some of yours came over that way too. After the debt is paid, the person is free again. In God's law, poor Israelites were to be assisted in every way and without being charged any interest. Someone in debt, though, had the right to sell himself to a fellow Israelite to be treated as a hired person, but not as a slave. However, here a creditor was coming to force these two boys to work for him as a means of paying the debt, leaving the widow alone. That's not what God intended for widows at all. Let's start reading in verse 2. And Elisha said to her, "What shall I do for you? Tell me, what do you have in the house?"
And she said, "Your maidservant has nothing in the house except a jar of oil." Then he said, "Go borrow vessels at large for yourself from all your neighbors, even empty vessels. Do not get a few. And you shall go in and shut the door behind you and your sons and pour out into all these vessels, and you shall set aside what is full." So she went from him and shut the door behind her and her sons. They were bringing the vessels to her, and she poured. And it came about when the vessels were full that she said to her son, "Bring me another vessel." And he said to her, "There is not one vessel more." And the oil stopped. Then she came and told the man of God, and he said, "Go sell the oil and pay your debt, and you and your sons can live on the rest." Well, God took whatever resources this woman had, plus her obedience and her initiative, and provided for her. What was her responsibility? She had to get out of the house, go knock on her neighbor's doors. She had to ask them to borrow as many empty jars as they would be willing to loan her. Then she had to take her sons with her into privacy, pour the oil, and watch God multiply it. It was only after she did that that she was told to go back to her neighbors and sell her oil. She would pay her debt, live on the rest, and that required good financial planning on her part not to get in debt again. One writer said that her life and situation proves how God is able to multiply whatever we surrender. He provided for her future as well as paying off her debt. What was the responsibility of the neighbors around her? First of all, they had to loan her the empty vessels. And then they had to buy her oil to sell it. But now this was something they needed. Everybody needed oil, and they had to get oil from somewhere. So she was selling them something that they needed. This would be equivalent to her local church, the neighbors in her community, because they were all Jews, so that was like her local church in her Jewish community. Of what had her neighbors been made aware during this time? Remember, they were supposed to take care of her. They were supposed to help her. Obviously, they hadn't been helping her, so they were being made aware of their own neglect. Was she still a widow? Yes. Was she raising sons alone? Yes. But what had changed? She had a way of providing for herself and supporting her family. How can we apply this today? I don't have a lot of ideas for this, but I thought about setting up a needy woman or a needy family with a job or a home business, especially if a mom who's got little kids and she needs to provide for herself and her kids. You could provide the capital for the business. She could provide the equipment. You could even provide the clients, help her to advertise, get clients. You could even be a client yourself. You probably have some other ideas as you sit and think about it. I bet you come up with some even better applications than that. I couldn't think of any others. I want to recap what the scriptures teach about helping a needy woman and her family. Okay, you're on the one who can help. Give good usable stuff, the best you have to give. Make it easy for her to get it and use it. Number two, be a helper and a friend for the long term. You know, most emergency situations last longer than a day. And a lot of people just need a helper and a support during that whole time that they're in crisis. Number three, enable her to improve her conditions. Help her evaluate her resources and pray for God to multiply them to provide for her. Just praying that God will show her what she can already use that she has to help provide for her. Now, if you're on the receiving end, put your hope in God, not in prosperity. So many people buy lottery tickets, gamble away money with this hope of, you know, becoming millionaires, because that's what their hope is. Their hope is not in God. Their hope is in future prosperity. Rejoice with God and with the giver for his provision. Thank God for whatever he has provided. And if anybody gives you something, thank God and thank the person. Rejoice with God about that provision. Don't be afraid to share out of your meager supplies. Do it in faith, that God will help those supplies stretch.